to the P3 Pilates Progressions Program, brought to you by Personalized Pilates. If you would like more information about the whole P3 program, please visit www.personalizedpilates.com. I'm Katrina Fo, your host for tonight. I'm a second-generation Pilates Master Teacher Trainer, and I'm here to answer all your Pilates and anatomy questions so that you can take your Pilates teaching to the next level.
Welcome. Tonight we've got some great questions that you have sent in, and if you would like to talk live, we are taking callers. The number to call in is 347-838-9945, and just to let me know that you have a question, that you're not just listening as your means of hearing the show, and I will get to you as soon as possible. So tonight I'm just going to jump right in, and I'm going to start with our first question. This is a huge issue and very controversial. This is probably one of the biggest stumbling blocks, mindset issues that new instructors have trouble with, especially if they come from a personal training, kind of fitnessy background, group exercise, that kind of thing. So we have a lot of questions about this, and I'm happy to explain it as many times as necessary, and I just love that somebody sent this in because it's really, really important, and it's very, very popular to ask. Okay, so here's the question, now that I've talked and told you all about it and gotten your curiosity up, hopefully. All right, she wrote, "Hi, Katrina. I've been thinking about roll downs from standing, elephant, footwork on reformer, hamstring stretch one on the chair, etc., when I cue legs to be straight, i.e. no, quote, soft knees. I have always cued these exercises to straight legs. I've been to a few continuing ed courses where I've heard the physical therapists talk about how no one is straightening their legs anymore. This reinforces my belief that the legs should be completely straight when doing these exercises. Of course, I make the exception if there is pain with a knee replacement or injury. I'm talking about normal bodies, though. At the place where I work and on a couple of videos I've watched, they were cueing soft knees for the elephant. The girl looked in her 20s, and there was no indication of a knee problem. The girls I work with also cue roll-downs with soft knees. They come from a gym background. These two different instances have come at me within the same week, so I got to thinking, am I cueing incorrectly? Thank you in advance for sorting this out for me. Smiley face." I am more than happy to give you my thoughts and opinions on this. Again, I will reiterate, this is a very controversial subject, and you'll probably find a lot more information saying the opposite of what I'm saying. But what I want you to do is to think about the why, and I really want to talk about the why behind it. So it's not just a black and white yes or no. It's not quite that simple. I want you to understand why people are cueing one way or another and what their background is, so you can understand not only the psychology of, you know, what's going on behind the anatomy, but the psychology going on behind what's in the instructor's head and why it's there. So first, I just want to go over the basic anatomy so we can then talk about why people say one versus the other. And then we can also talk in amongst there about some different issues when you wouldn't do this. So just as a broad spectrum, you know, takeaway, what we're talking about here is for a normal knee. Okay, right now we are not talking about abnormal knees, whether it's an acute injury, a chronic injury, some kind of a muscle imbalance, pain, any of those things, that's not what we're talking about. Abnormal structure, we're going to talk about when people have loose ligaments and stuff and have hyperextended knees throughout this. So, but right now, the main thing we're talking about is normal knees. So this is what the question's about, and that's why I want to clarify. Okay, because people are going to get all upset when they hear me talking and say, well, what about this? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about normal knees. So a healthy, normal knee needs, and I repeat, this is like capital N-E-E-D-S, needs to straighten all the way. In the basic, most basic movement that we do every day, walking, you should go through full range of motion of your leg, including fully extended leg. That fully extended position, so when the leg that is back is pushing off the ground, it needs to be an extension, otherwise you're not utilizing the full power of the leg and you're not incorporating the hip, meaning the hamstring aspect, in your propulsion to drive you forward, and you're missing a lot of it. And I would argue that that's a major contributor to where people get funky gait patterns. You know, people talk a lot about the foot strike and how people roll through their foot and everything. I think a huge part of it is people don't straighten their legs all the way. They don't utilize the hip extension aspect of it. On a side note, this can be really messed up when people do a lot of treadmill walking. So when you're on a treadmill, okay, people do that a ton for cardio, and you've heard my position on cardio before. This is completely separate, but if you're doing treadmill work, whether it's for cardio or rehab or whatever, your machine pulls the surface, the ground, if you will, underneath you. So you don't need to propel yourself forward. Okay, in fact, you're trying to, you know, kind of stay in the same place and everything, and you utilize the hips very differently on something like a treadmill than if you were on the ground. And this can actually have a lot of biomechanical implications. Katie Mobin has a really interesting article on it and talks a lot about this, that, you know, how the treadmills are not helpful for hip patterns and gait patterns and such. Quite honestly, there's a huge benefit to fresh air and sunshine. So, I mean, that's just one of many reasons why it's better, if possible, to get outside and walk as much as possible, not on the treadmill. I understand, you know, sometimes if you're needing for schedule-wise to do your exercise at 5 in the morning or something, or it's dangerous outside or whatever, that's not always possible. Or if it's, you know, freezing cold, you know, that kind of thing. But as much as possible, it's so much better for so many reasons to get outside. Okay, so that was a slight bunny trail. We're going to go back to the knees and talk about this whole knee problem. So you should, my point with that bunny trail was that you need to get a full range of motion. It is part of how we were created and part of daily life, and our normal movement repertoire should include that. Now, what is going on there? Why are people saying soft knees, and why would you do this differently? So in a healthy leg, what should happen is when you straighten your leg, you should have the muscles on the back side of your leg that bend the knee, so like hamstrings and such, oppose the front side of the leg, so quads, which extend the knee, they should be working together. And they should be working, you know, one is contracting, one is lengthening. So we got that eccentric, concentric contractions going on. So, but both sides are contracting. One's a lengthening contraction, the eccentric, and one is a concentric contraction, which is the shortening. And you want both, okay? A lot of people have this malfunctioning, dysfunctioning, and what they will do is what I call be lazy. And the back side of the leg, the hamstrings, which should be in the eccentric phase, the lengthening, they will actually just let go. And they just turn off and are lazy, for lack of a technical term there. And what happens is people will still be working their quads to straighten the leg and shorten the quads. And that will be driving the leg into that straight position. And all that's holding it, opposing that, are the ligaments. Okay, now over time, this isn't going to happen, like be a problem that day. They're not going to feel any snaps or crackles, or they're not going to, you know, all of a sudden keel over with shooting pain. So it's not anything dramatic. But over time, meaning years and years and years of doing this, they will stretch those ligaments out. Okay, now also what they're doing is they're creating imbalance, muscular imbalances and poor muscular contractions, and the muscles aren't working well together, which could cause other problems. But the big thing is those ligaments will get lax. Now, ligaments aren't like muscles. We don't have voluntary control over when they contract and stuff like that. They lengthen out, and they kind of just stay like that. So we want to keep them tight and tone as possible. So when they do get loosened up, we have to work extra hard on the muscles that protect them, so in this case specifically the hamstrings, by bending the knee to keep that protected. Okay, so think about this. If you're looking at a side view of a knee, you have the muscles in the back of the leg, the hamstrings, and again, I'm oversimplifying everything, and the muscles in the front of the leg, the quads, and they should both be working and squeezing that knee joint together, kind of like a panini press, okay, holding it. Not just the quads driving the kneecap backwards into that hyperextended position. So some definitions here. A straight knee where your thigh bone and your tibia are, you know, just one straight line, no bend. That's normal, okay? That's the full straight normal range of motion. Now, a lot of people have an abnormal range of motion where they go past that and the knee starts bending backwards. And that's what we term hyperextension. So it's gone past hyperextension. So the straight leg extended position, the end range, which should be the end range. Now, when that happens, again, there is more stress on the ligaments. The hamstrings are at a weaker state to contract and protect and everything. And so the joint is in a kind of unstable, not a great place. You're at a higher risk for injuries. Again, this is not something that is going to cause pain right in the moment for most people, unless they've done this for a long time, but it could eventually cause injuries, problems, and potential pain. People that are more susceptible to this, usually it's a structural thing that kind of goes on all over the body, in that it's not just their knees that hyperextend and, you know, they have loose ligaments there. It's kind of the whole body. So this tends to be the Gumby, ballerina, contortionist type person. And they don't have to be super, super flexible, but you will usually see it more than just at the knees, okay? So you'll see it the exact same thing. Everything I'm talking about today with the knees, the exact same thing happens at the elbows, okay? So just a little side detour, I'll mention the elbows because it's very interesting. It's not quite as controversial and discussed as much, simply because the elbows are not as often weight-bearing in most exercises. That doesn't mean it's not as important, and quite frankly, the elbows tend to hyperextend more often than the knees. So to me, it's kind of more important in some ways. And since in Pilates we do a lot of weight-bearing on our hands, it is very important. So for the structure in the elbows, the corresponding muscles, so the hamstrings bend the knee, the biceps bend the elbow. So those two would be corresponding. Anytime I'm talking about the quads straighten the knee, the corresponding muscle group, and again, I'm oversimplifying, there's multiple muscles up there in the elbow doing this, are the triceps. The triceps extend the elbow, okay? So the one that's being lazy in the elbow is the bicep group, okay? They are not brachioradialis and stuff in there too, but they're not holding that side of the panini press. So if you see someone doing a push-up and their elbow bends, the eye of their elbow is the inside part that gets folded in, not the knobby do on the back side of the elbow, the olecranon process that you know, you hit and you get your funny bone, but the eye, the inside of the elbow, if that swivels and turns forward from a push-up position, you can bet that they have locked out. As we say, they've gone into hyperextension, meaning they've let go of their bicep and they're leaning on ligaments. And that's what we don't want. We don't want the leaning on the ligaments. So here's the bottom line after all that. Here's the answer. Okay, in my opinion, what we don't want is we don't want the leaning on the ligaments. That's what's going to hurt the body. We want the muscles to be working eccentrically and concentrically in that panini press around the joint. That's going to protect the joint. It's going to give you the strongest position for whatever exercise you're doing. And it's going to be firm and solid. So especially when you get to those more advanced Pilates exercises and you're doing things like snake or twist, you've got a solid base to go from in terms of having those knees strong and straight. What we don't want is we don't want that hyperextension leaning on the ligaments where you're potentially encouraging muscular imbalances, we're encouraging lazy muscles, we're encouraging the leaning and laxity and overstretching of the ligaments, all that kind of stuff. Okay? That's why this is an issue. Now, I want to go into the psychology a little bit, and then I'll talk about the quick fix and why, how we deal with this. So psychologically, there's a lot of talk in the fitness world about soft knees. Now, I don't mean to offend anyone that's in the fitness world, but I just want to point out that people in the fitness world, for the most part, do not have the same extensive anatomy training and background in terms of how much one-on-one and how much detail they're paying to the exercise. Okay, so I'm making that assumption. This is not always true, but that's the general most of the time. Okay, now there's a lot of Pilates instructors that slop through things and maybe don't take their job seriously, so I don't want to say this is always the case either. However, we have an amazing opportunity. One of the big reasons that people come in and one of the benefits they're looking for with Pilates is to be mindful and to get connected with their body and stuff. So they're not looking to tune out. Usually, quite often in the gym, they're looking to do something that's going to get them the results they want as fast with, you know, as little thought process as possible. Not everyone, okay, but that's kind of a more stereotypical. So when you're thinking about from a gym training person perspective, it is much easier to tell them to just keep that muscle firing so that they don't lean on the ligaments by bending the knee. Okay, so let's think about that and break that down. So if you have somebody that's hyperextending, what do? You have them turn their hamstrings on. Well, what's the easiest way you can guarantee they're turning their hamstrings on? You know, dumb it down, if you will. The easiest way is to, quote, soften their knees, bend it a little bit. Okay, that ensures that the hamstring's turning on because the hamstring does what? It bends the knee, right. So, again, this is the dumbed-down version of what you want the client to do. Now, I have higher expectations both for my clients and for my teaching. I believe, and, I very rarely have seen otherwise, that I can help the client find their hamstrings and keep them turned on without having to bend the knee. So the beautiful thing about Pilates exercises is that it is pretty much built in to our exercises to not rest on those ligaments and make them zip it up and turn those hamstrings on. Okay, so I'm going to give you some examples. So one of my favorite examples of this is hamstring stretch one on the chair. And I can tell from standing across the room whether someone's got their hamstrings on or not by the way they look from the side. Okay, so if you're standing behind the person, you may or may not be able to tell very well. But if you're looking at a side profile, if they are swayed back with their pelvis so that their pelvis is way behind their heels and their toes might be, you know, kind of lifting off, they're not cued in to their hamstrings. Okay, their sits bones are flying up to the sky and their weight is shifted so that it's you know, less on that those ligaments, but the hamstrings are not doing their job. So it's very, very easy. All you have to do is give your best cues in whatever way you want to say it to get that those hamstrings connected. So my favorite way is quick and dirty, put your weight on your toes as equally with your heels. So most people tend to shift their weight back under their heels. It's natural. It's easier. Of course, we always go to the easiest position possible, right? Our bodies know what's easy, and it goes to it every time. So get the weight even on the balls of the feet and the heels. Okay, that's a real easy one for most people. They're looking down anyways, et cetera. Get your pelvis over your heels. If you have somebody that's completely disconnected with their body, before they start the exercise, you can stand behind them, and you can say, okay, I am a wall covered with wet paint. Don't touch me or you've ruined your outfit. You know, I'm giving some imagery in here, obviously, but you don't want their butt to be pushing you backwards. And most of the time, the first time they do it, they're going to just ram right into you and be like, oh, whoops, had no idea I was going to do that because they're just completely out to lunch with it. And it just gives them that very concrete, tactile feedback of what you want them to do. Now, what they're doing mechanically is in order to achieve what I'm talking about, keeping the pelvis over the feet, is that they actually have to articulate their spine more, extra side bonus, right? We kind of like that in Pilates. And they're going to keep their hamstrings engaged to pull their sits bones down, pointing towards the ground as long as possible, which is really going to open up that low back, which who isn't looking for that on hamstring stretch, right? A lot of people complain about their clients doing all the flexion in the thoracic area, this is one way to get it in their lumbar area. So they really got to get those hamstrings pulling the sits bones down. They're also going to get a connection from the front side. The rectus abdominis is, you know, the abdominals are pulling the pubic bone towards the chin. They really get that deep posterior tilt. So again, it's a combination of rectus abdominis and your hamstrings to get that in this exercise. And by doing that, it keeps the hamstrings connected. Now, the hamstrings not only are attached to the sits bones, but they also go down to the tibia and are going through the back of the knee. So they do both. They do hip extension, and they do that knee flexion. So right now, we're getting the hamstrings turned on and staying on by focusing on the pelvis and the hip joint. And then as they roll down further, you keeping their pelvis over their feet in this position is going to really be driven home by keeping that pelvis over their feet and having the hamstrings stay connected. So, again, it's protecting the back of the leg ligaments, the back of the knee, rather, ligaments, and so they're not getting leaned on, that lazy resting position in there that we tend to go to. This happens in a lot of exercises. So the locking back, I hate that word because people get so hung up on the term locking, and they think that anything straight leg is locking. Locking is kind of a slang term that's developed in the fitness area that is talking about hyperextension. So again, the key to not locking is to keep the hamstrings engaged. This does not mean that you have to bend the knee fully, or most people when they soften the knees, they're in a slight bend. They're not 180-degree straight leg. Okay, so anti-locking does not necessarily mean softening the knee. That's the revolutionary message that I want to put out there. It's that it's not that you have to soften your knee, but we are not teaching locking the knees either. Okay, there's something else in between the two, and this is what I want to argue is a straight leg with appropriately firing front and back side. So cues like pull your kneecap up, you know, what that's doing is it's cueing your quads to lock your knee more. And we don't need the cues in the quads. We need the cues in the back of the leg. A lot of times another cue is, you know, tactilely just kind of tickling the back of their leg and say, keep these muscles turned on. And sometimes, again, sometimes these cues work for one client better than another, so you want to have lots of them in your box of cue repertoire. Lots of great things like that. With the elbows, I had alluded to the fact before that the elbows do the same thing. Again, push-up position, it's so easy. It's offensive. If they're in that position, obviously they got a good chance of looking at the eyes of their elbows, and all you have to do is say, turn them to face each other. Okay? All that does is slightly turn the biceps on enough so they're not leaning on those elbow ligaments, and it's going to, quote, fix the problem, if you will. And they're not bending their elbows. Okay, again, that's just turning the biceps on in a more extreme way so you actually get movement at the joint. And you don't necessarily need it that much on. You just need it a little bit so that you're not leaning on the ligaments. Okay, so in terms of the situation that this instructor is describing, yes, it's very, very common. If I was to make an exercise video, it would not be a bad choice to tell people to keep their knees soft to prevent injuries and therefore lawsuits. Okay, so psychologically, you have to understand that if you are not there to touch and feel and see and look at what's going on, it is much safer from a legal standpoint to tell them to bend their knees. Because then you know that they've got those hamstrings or biceps turned on and they're protecting their knees. Hear me well. I'm going out on a limb and I'm putting the responsibility on you guys to do a better job and to take the bar up a notch and say, you know what, this is a range that my client really needs to work and it's healthy and good for their body and I'm going to take responsibility and make sure that they're doing it correctly and not just doing it the easy way to cue kind of a thing. So that's the challenge. Can you be the better instructor to not only cue it well but to look at them, assess them, are they doing it right, and give them corrections. Okay, so all that being said, I'm going to throw this big disclaimer out there. I will say that in my years of teaching, there have been the occasional client that does not get it. Or maybe they're new to Pilates, they're totally disconnected from their body, they have no coordination, you know, whatever is going on. And there's nothing wrong with their knees, I'm saying, but they're not there mind-body-wise to be able to do what I'm talking about. And you cue them, you give them your best stuff, they're not getting it, they're starting to get frustrated, just say soften your knees. Okay, so it's not that softening your knees is bad or it's going to hurt anyone. It's just you're going to miss some of the lovely benefits of straightening your knees, but it is a safer position, if you will. So, yes, sometimes even I use the term soften your knees, bend your knees slightly, whatever you want to say, to get a person to where they're safe. And, you know, depending on what exercise you're doing and what issues the client has, sometimes that's not the battle you need to pick. Sometimes there's something going on with their shoulder or they've got some kind of back injury or something else going on, and it's like, you know, I need to not deal with that and be focusing and cueing on that. I need to prioritize and just let that go. And so you say soften the knees, and you may come back later when some of the other issues are not as acute and deal with it and correct it and say, okay, you know what, you're more advanced now. We're going to work on, you know, keeping your knees straight because you can handle it now. Okay, so I want to just mention that because this kind of goes back to our lecture in the P3 about prioritization, excuse me, I can't talk, and how you have to pick your battles in Pilates. And this goes in any fitness field. It's very important to pick your battles, and this would be one that I think is fairly important, but it's not always the most important, depending on the client and the body that's in front of you. You have to choose that. Now, we mentioned that there is also sometimes these issues if there's a knee problem. And I'm being very vague. I'm not going to get into specific details because there's no need. If they can't straighten their leg all the way, or if they are in pain when they straighten their leg all the way, the most common time I see this is when people are hypermobile and they've been doing a lot of stuff in that hypermobile state, like what I'm talking about, the resting on their ligaments, it will get painful, and they can have a lot of pain with that, and they're uncomfortable and stuff like that. The time I see that the most is in the mat work, the leg pull with the back support. So the hands are in back, you're doing like a reverse plank where your belly is facing up. And people can't do that with their legs straight, and they get all uncomfortable. And you can play with pointed feet or flex feet, or the quickest, easiest is to put a foam roller under their legs and do it that way, and it works really well. But or under their ankles, rather. It just helps them cue that hamstring to turn on. Okay, so this is a sign that there is something going on, and they need to work on this in another easier exercise to get those hamstrings to fire and protect them and find what does normal center, 180-degree straight leg, feel like. So for those type of people, it's recalibrating what is straight. Okay, so when we say straight, we mean the leg bones are lined up so it's a perfectly straight line, 180, you know, perfectly open angle. Now, that doesn't feel straight to them. What feels straight is to go into that locked out, hyperextended knee position. So your job is to be their external, you know, person that can see and say, okay, your leg is in hyperextension. I want you to bend slightly to get it to straight. Okay, so for them, it's a totally different set of cues. It's going to feel different. And over time, what you're doing is neuromuscularly recalibrating what center feels like. What does straight leg feel like? So they're not really bending their knee, but they're bending it from hyperextended position just to get it straight. Okay, so that's somebody that has the hypermobile. They may have been a ballerina. They may just have Gumby joints, that kind of thing. Now, these people are much more likely to get injured, period, because all over their body, their joints are looser, their ligaments are more lax, and they're not protected as well. They sure look good doing Pilates because, wow, they're flexible. That's not what they need. They don't need to work those end ranges. They need to work on the stability of those joints. And this is one of the biggest battles that you'll face if you ever work with somebody that's like a ballerina or figure skater or something like that, where they need their flexibility for their art. They want to work those end ranges, and they don't want to work the stability. But you're looking out for their best interest in that they need that stability in order to be able to have longevity, okay, and have injury-free, you know, career or, you know, hobby, whatever you want, whatever's going on there. So those are some thoughts. Again, I think it depends on the situation. I've given you some ideas of why people do that. I know that a lot of the fitness training certification stuff, you know, there's group fitness, personal training, they teach you to have soft knees and never really straighten them during exercises and stuff. And again, a lot of it's because the instructors are not taught how to cue. They're not taught how to assess properly. They're teaching huge classes, boot camps and things like that, where they can't monitor and go around individually to that. And there is a time and a place for those cues. But if you are working at a deeper level and really wanting to change the person's body and how neuromuscularly they're functioning and their muscular imbalances, you're going to need to take it to the next level and actually work on the straight leg appropriately. And so that's why I wanted to take some time and go over what is correct, what is functional, what is, you know, easier to cue or harder to cue, and why you should cue one versus the other. If you're in a situation where somebody's giving you a hard time or your employer wants you to teach a certain way, you can educate them, but you might just need to go along with it. I find the most awkward situation is when I've taught group classes like at a gym, and I'm talking about Pilates, not like spinning or, you know, whatever else, but teaching Pilates, and you've got people that do other modalities. They do personal training or, you know, kickboxing or whatever else they do there, because, you know, a lot of times with the gym membership, you get a whole bunch of stuff, so you get people that do lots of different things in that setting, and they've been taught by other instructors to soften the knees. Okay, so the easiest way to overcome that is, especially since it's so awkward when you're in a group class, you don't want to stop the class and give them a half an hour lecture on why, you know, they need to straighten their knees. Okay, so here's a couple good ones. One is, well, Pilates is different. Now, this does not work if the Pilates instructor on Wednesday teaches soft knees and you're on Friday and you teach straight legs. That doesn't make any sense to them. The quick and dirty, easy, always works, and true, but quick to explain, is that this is more advanced. You know what? I think that you have control of your body and that you can handle this. This is a more advanced technique. Okay, if you cater to their ego, no one ever is going to argue with you. They're just not. And I hate to say that, but pride is, you know, common to all of us humans, right? Another way to spin this is to explain to them quickly, for that particular setting, that, you know, there are advanced exercises in Pilates, which we have not gotten to yet, but require that you are able to maintain and have the strength to keep your legs straight in a safe way, that I can't teach you if you can't do this. So we are prepping you for more advanced things. Who doesn't want to get to the cool stuff, right? This works particularly well if you're in a studio and there are some advanced clients around and you can point out some of those exercises during, you know, the lesson, you know, maybe not right that second. But if you see someone doing something like, you know, pull-ups on the chair or something, you know, that's a good example. I don't want somebody doing that if they don't have control over their legs to keep their legs straight, especially if they can't control their arms. A lot of women have a very hard time. We're actually, I think we have another question about this, keeping their arms straight. And I won't let them go near that exercise if they're going to bend their arms uncontrollably, you know, and they can't maintain that, because what's going to happen if they start doing that? They're going to fall on their head, and that's not a good Pilates experience, and it's not something that I want to have happen on my watch or in my studio. So there's some different ways that you can attack that issue without having to be confrontational. Now, you could allude to, you know, talking to them afterwards about that and explaining it more thoroughly, or you could just, you know, grab them afterwards if possible and say, you know, I wanted to give you some more information about this and I wasn't able to discuss it during the class, and you can kind of briefly summarize what I've just been telling you about how the knee works and such. those are some thoughts I have. I do not think that this instructor is cueing incorrectly. I think you're doing an awesome job at helping your clients to work with straight legs. Again, it's not for everybody. If they've got injuries or they're in pain with the fully straight leg, which does happen, you can start with softened knees and get them stronger, work on the mechanics all around the knee, hips, ankles, all that kind of stuff, and make sure everything's functioning well. And gradually, as they trust you, as their body gets stronger, they can start to straighten it more and more. But again, that takes a lot of psychological trust, especially if they've been conditioned to always keep their leg straight, if they've had an injury and it scares them to not straighten their leg. It's just something that you have to creep into gradually and work through slowly and talk to them. Okay, so there you go. Hopefully that answers your question. And if you have other thoughts, please let me know. I'm going to delve into another question. Okay, so this is kind of a two-part question about a specific client and some issues that they have. So I'm going to read the whole thing, and then I'm going to go through slowly different parts of it because there's a lot of pieces. All right, I have a new client who is a top-level horse rider for dressage and jumping. She has weakness on her right side. She tells me everything on that side is weaker. She's right-handed and tells me she does equal right-left side work in the arena. When she does running footwork on the reformer, her right side hip hikes, but her left side is stable. The other place I see a difference is when she's doing standing leg pumps on the chair. She's unable to drop the right hip so that it's level with the standing left leg hip. I hope all this makes sense. If I look at her face on, I see a, quote, hourglass female figure on the right side, and the left side is straight down. I would think that this would indicate a strong left oblique and a weak right one? Question mark. I'm not sure how to cue the right side during footwork running. I have pointed out that this is occurring, but it doesn't seem to help it. I've tried using imagery, the ribs moving away from the hip and lengthening that side from foot to shoulder. Okay. Then she writes, on another note, she also has trouble getting both arms overhead without bending her elbows. She knows how to slide her shoulders down when asked, but the elbows bend further. This is equal on both sides throughout the left arm, though the left arm may be bent a bit more. Does this indicate tightness in the lats? Would this affect the pelvic stability? She has no pain in the overhead arm position. She has no pain anywhere. She just knows that her riding is suffering because of that weak right side. She's just beginning Pilates 2 sessions in, so maybe it will just take a while to understand what I'm asking. Any thoughts on how I can help will be greatly appreciated. Thanks. Okay, so there's a lot of things here I want to address, and I'm just going to start at the beginning and go through this email. So, first off, I guess this isn't starting at the beginning, but a lot of this is she's new. The mind-body connection stuff may not be quite as connected in this arena. Sorry, bad pun, right? And it may take a while for you guys to develop a relationship and her to understand what the machines are doing and kind of get acclimated. And it may just work itself out without any of this discussion that I'm going to have. But I'm still going to give you some thoughts on, you know, this issue. Now, in terms of right to left side imbalances of the pelvis and what usually shows itself up as hip hiking, so that's when one hip is higher than the other. I'm just talking in general now. The muscles that you probably want to first look at would be the obliques, so your side ab muscles, your QL, which is quadratus lumborum. It's in your back. It runs from your lowest ribs to the top of your hip crest in the back. And then also the glute medius. And that's in the side of your hip and works on abduction of the hip. The leg at the hip joint. So those are probably the first things I would look at. And which one are you going to see? Which one's going to show up more? It could be, you know, all the left side of all three of those are really weak or, you know, right side or whatever, depending on the imbalance. But it could be just one of them. The best way to figure this out is to look at something and look at the exercise in terms of where's the closed chain. And that's going to give you more feedback. So for something like a footwork, the whole thing is closed, so it makes it a little more complicated to see what's going on versus on your standing leg pumps. You've got the foot on the pedal, which is going to push the hip up and really have to work, you know, different aspects of the different exercises. So my thought on that standing leg pump is that you might have too much spring on there for that exercise for her to be able to stabilize. I would do it with as low a weight as I needed, lowest spring setting, meaning making the pedal press down easier until she can get her pelvis stable without the pedal moving. So when she first puts her, I believe it's her right foot on the pedal, I would want her to, before she starts moving, see if she can get her pelvis stable. Now, if, depending on your studio setup, you can get it so that she's looking in a mirror, that might help. The visual feedback might help. And putting your hands on her ASIs, her hip bones, might help as well. Again, getting that kinesthetic feeling and that visual feedback, those can be tools that you can use. You don't need them all the time, but to start out to figure this out when she's disconnected with this, especially since this is the whole reason she's coming in to do Pilates, can be really powerful because you want her to find this fast so that she really believes in it and understands what the benefits are going to be for her. So getting her to feel that before the pedal even moves is critical. If she is starting with a hip hike, she's not going to get it, usually finding it later. So stop what you're doing, get her to find it, and then tell her something to the effect of, now I only want you to press that pedal down as far as you can go, keeping those hips level. Okay? So she can have her hands on her hips, she can look at herself in the mirror, whatever, to get that feedback of when it's going up and down. If she needs you, you could, you know, and she's not getting it with any of those other feedback messages, you can, you know, be a buzzer and let her know, oh, no, you lost it. Okay, go back and, you know, keep giving it to her. And that'll take a little longer, but that'll work as well. So you are her feedback loop. I do find that the standing leg pumps on the chair is quite difficult, though, for people that really struggle with this issue. So for those that don't really struggle, this is a great one to work on this because it challenges it. But if they have a problem with it to begin with, this is not where I would go. My favorite spot would be to have them do the standing leg spring series. So the reasoning is that the angle of force that's coming from the leg spring, the spring, in that exercise is horizontal, not vertical. So your spring in your chair when you're doing the standing leg pumps is pulling the pedal up and down, and it's going to push that pedal up, which is going to force your hip up. So you're working against her, not with her. And then that's much more difficult, if that makes sense. So the standing leg pump series, the standing leg spring series on the Cadillac Tower, whatever you want to use, is a fabulous exercise. Now, I just want to really reiterate when you're doing that, it's not about the spring. You can do this and make someone cry with burning sensation with no spring, okay? This is about the standing leg and keeping that pelvis symmetrical, that pelvis stable and not hip-hiked. So on this exercise, the leg that's really working, the glute medius, the abductors that are working are really on the standing leg. It's not the leg that's hip-hiking. And this usually blows people's mind. So try that exercise and see, and this is going to give you a good feedback of whether it's glute medius, because you can really see clearly glute medius shine or fail miserably on this one. Okay, so what I do is I'll put the spring on somebody, and again, you can totally do this without the spring at all. The spring is optional. The spring's not really moving. I would definitely do it on a flat, not squishy surface. So if you have raised mats or mats at all, I would kind of kick them to the side for this exercise. So this is not a balance issue. And I would have them first. And again, if you could do it in front of the mirror, hands on the hips, whatever feedback would be helpful, awesome, use it. Try this standing. And they just stand there and are trying to get the hips level. Now, usually what they do is they sink. Okay, so this is the opposite of hip hiking. So the standing leg's hip is higher than the leg that has the spring. And what you want to do is use glute medius to get the pelvis level and then keep it. My favorite image cue is like to imagine that the cup part, the acetabulum of the pelvis is like hovering above the thigh bone. Imagery-wise, you can use the idea of, you know, pulling up a pair of pantyhose on that standing leg or sports shorts, you know, for the men, whatever you want to use, and so that they really get that lift in the hip socket, that glute medius. Now, probably it's, you know, that could be a really great helpful tool to see if it's glute medius. I think probably from what you're saying with the standing leg pumps, there's a very good chance it's the obliques not stabilizing and conjunction. It's a kind of a whole convoluted mess, several of them and things going on. But getting that awareness is going to be much easier for her on how to control her pelvis on the floor with the standing leg springs series. And you can do all four sides. It doesn't really matter. Again, it's just the challenge of keeping the standing leg and pelvis still. The leg with the spring is just extra variation. It's fun stuff. It's not really working that leg at all. That's not where you're going to get your work for the leg and the spring. Some other exercises. One of my favorites, obviously you can do like the side bends. Side bends on a ladder barrel are very telling. You know, if it feels like it's, quote, going into her back, that's a sign that it is QL. And so you need to roll them, make sure they're square on their hip. But again, if they have QL issues, they're probably going to have hip hiking issues and stuff. And so that's going to give you some indicator. And again, you could do side bends on the chair, on the reformer box, on the ladder barrel. You'd see it all in the same way. The obliques, again, any of these exercises, you're going to have a right side and a left side. Utilize that to the best of your ability and say things like, okay, after they do the first side, whichever side it is, say something like, okay, remember how this feels. We're into the other side, and I want you to compare how it feels to the other side. And for somebody that's got an imbalance from right to left, whether it's scoliosis or it's some kind of a pelvic instability, it's going to feel wildly different, and that's good. That's good. Say things like, I want to really make sure you're aware of this because we're going to make it so they eventually feel the same. That's our goal. You know, this is the casting the vision. This is the vision statement that, you know, we talk about with your value-adding statements, you know, and vision casting lecture that I would recommend going back to. So discussing that and bringing it to her attention that, yes, you feel this, and this is where we're going to go with it. This is what we're going to do for you, and this is how we're going to get there. So bringing her attention when you're working on this with different exercises, because these exercises are not going to look connected to her probably, and you want her to be aware of that. Okay, now I'm going to talk a little bit about the arms overhead, and I kind of alluded to this before. A lot of, especially women, but men too, have a very, very hard time getting their arms over their head straight. Now, most of the time, we as instructors just kind of ignore it, no big deal. This is something that I really pick on, though. And those of you that have seen me teach or taken lessons from me privately know that you are not allowed to do that unless you have some kind of a shoulder injury, elbow thing, whatever going on. If you're doing, say, elephant or, you know, if you're doing, say, the short box series and with the bar, you know, and everything, you need to have your arms in line with your ears, straight above your head, and your hands are shoulder distance apart with your thumbs by your fingers, wrist open. Now, why is that? Why am I so anal retentive about this? This is good shoulder mechanics. This is ideal. So, again, this is not for everybody. If they have a shoulder issue, I give them some grace. I let their hands come a little forward of their head. I let their elbows bend maybe a little. I let their hands be wider than their shoulders, all that kind of stuff. That's fine if there's an injury. The problem comes when most instructors don't ever utilize this opportunity in a non-resistance, you know, weight-bearing, you know, kind of position to really work on good mechanics in the full range of motion. So this is just like the knee thing. We're just kind of missing the full range of motion, and getting those shoulders to work in the range they're supposed to. So this can be a couple different things. The first thing I would look at is, like you mentioned, the tightness in the lats. So I think you're probably on the right track. This is a very, 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 very common imbalance. I would say most people are tight in the lats to some degree. We don't do a lot of overhead work. It gets tight. Our arms are usually down by our side. This is pretty easy to work on with some simple overhead work. So, again, the first thing I would go to is working it eccentrically, not passive stretching, but working it in that position. So let's get them up there, arms overhead. So my two favorite places would be, like I said, that like maybe a flat back on the short box with the arms overhead in that positioning, or elephant's a great one too. People shake on the shoulders on the elephant when you cue them properly. So I want their shoulders far away from their ear. I want their arms in line with their ear from the side view. I want them straight. I want those elbows straight. So, you know, kind of keep tapping those elbows. Bring their attention to it, because about every 5 seconds, they bend again. And this is a strength issue, okay? So you're working the lats eccentrically in that lengthened position, but you're really working on strengthening those shoulders. And you want that. Again, I alluded to earlier, if somebody does not have this strength in this end range of motion, I don't let them, they don't get to do things like snake, twist, you know, the pull-ups on the chair, all those kinds of exercises where you're weight-bearing, because they're going to fall on their head. And when they have moving pieces of equipment like the carriage on the reformer or the pedal on the chair, that's super, super dangerous, okay? And your spotting techniques are going to have to be like catching, you know, a horse coming flying at you. It's not going to work. You need to have them have that strength innately. And this is what I would look for when you are looking to advance somebody. Do they have this capability? I mean, it looks silly and looks like no big deal when you're looking at, you know, an intermediate exercise like, you know, the box series and the reformer. But once you get them weight bearing, it's critical that they have that, that they keep the legs straight, they can keep the arms straight, they have that stability, they have that full range of motion in those joints to be able to do things. And it's for a lot of exercises, not just the ones I mentioned, but, you know, the radio show does need to stay within time limit. Otherwise, we'd be talking forever. Okay, so again, the cues that I, or the psychology and value-adding statements and education that I talked about with why you strain your knees and what we're working towards about this is more advanced, this is harder. They're going to feel that it's harder and that this is going to prepare them for more advanced exercises. Same thing I would use here, okay? Super important. Now, your next question, does this affect pelvic stability? Yeah, this totally can affect pelvic stability. Does it in your particular client? I don't know. I'm going to talk about that in a second. But pelvic stability, why in the world would the lats affect pelvic stability? Most people think about the lats as kind of like, you know, in the armpit. But you got to remember, the lats not only attach, they go from the inside front of the arm bone, the humerus, they go down the back through the armpit, and they actually attach down onto the pelvis. And most people don't think of them attaching there because that's not really where you feel it. There's a lot of fascia in the connective tissue where the actual attachment is, obviously. And that's not where you feel the burn when you're doing lat work or anything. You feel it in the armpit. And it's not what you see or anything, but it is huge that it goes all the way down to the pelvis, so it can completely affect pelvic stability. And this is one of the most interesting things in Pilates is, you know, you look at the actions of the lats, and, you know, they talk about the internal rotation, the extension of the arm, and, you know, the adduction of the arm. You think iron cross and stuff. And those are all when the torso is stable and the arm is moving. But if you flip that, it is so interesting. And we actually do that a lot in Pilates and utilize lats in very different ways. So your arm is stabilized and your torso is moving. So two classic examples of this, we're using the lats in a very unconventional way, would be the mermaid and the swan. So the mermaid, you have your arm stabilized. It's attached to whatever bar you're holding onto, depending on where you're doing the mermaid. And you are moving the torso and bringing it closer to the arm bone by side bending. So the lat actually will work on side bending when the arm is stabilized. Okay, again, it's a very different way of utilizing the body, and I think it's an awesome way. The other thing, the swan, so say you have your hands, you know, on the foot bar or the push-through bar or whatever, so that's in the closed chain, that's the stable part, and you press up into your swan, you're using those lats, you know, people talk about you feel your armpits and stuff, that's what they're cueing, is those lats to work on the extension of the back. Okay, so it's really interesting how those can work so differently. That's kind of a bunny trail, but it's very interesting and just shows the connection to the pelvis very clearly, in my opinion. Now, for your particular client, you specifically mentioned that her tightness in her lats, possibly, meaning what you're seeing is that she can't keep her elbows straight kind of thing, is that it's equal on both sides. Probably, I would say not, that this is not her issue. If you saw any asymmetricalness, is that even a word, asymmetricalness? Any asymmetry in her lats, then I would say, yes, let's look at that. That's probably more of an issue. But this is definitely something you should work on either way with her. And it's very easy because you can't obviously work on the hip hiking thing the entire hour. As much as we OCD Pilates instructors, you know, get really super focused on their number one issue, you know, you can't work on it the whole hour. So, you know, working on some of their number two, three, four issues sprinkled in amongst the hour is very, very helpful. Okay, so make sure, because she's coming in for this right to left side work, that you sprinkle in lots of educational statements like we talked about with the value-adding statement lecture about which exercises in particular when you're doing them and how they are actually going to help this asymmetry right to left that she's got going on. Also, I would bring to her awareness any other imbalances muscularly at the joint level that you find and see, because, you know, that's just, she seems like somebody that cares, and she sounds like somebody that's already at a certain level of education to understand how these things are going to affect her. So that's going to be a really important thing in terms of keeping her as a client long term. All right, so that is going to be it for tonight. I want to say thank you, and you guys have been asking some awesome questions, and I think that this particular client that we were talking about today, although, you know, she's got very specific issues, there are things that we all can learn and work on, you know, with our clients and specifically with our cueing. I know I'm just going to go out there and say, I would say of the women that I've worked with, I would say at least half of them have this elbow bending issue. And it's easy to work on, and it will really make a big difference when you tell them, no, I want you to straighten your arms. This is going to add to the work. You know, when you bend your arms, you are cheating. You are getting out of the work because they literally don't know that that's part of it. And I would go so far as to say most Pilates instructors don't realize that. You see a lot of them doing a mermaid and the upper arm, the free arm, not the one we were talking about before, is going over in this beautiful ballet arced motion. Aesthetically, fabulous, looks gorgeous. Functionally, they're missing the full range of motion. So when I do it, I want my arm to go straight up by my head and really reach over. I want the shoulder out of the ear so that you get the full upward rotation of that scapula. And if that's the problem, they'll probably get some impingement, and it's a serratus anterior issue, which is a whole nother night. But you want to get that straight arm. And when you start to work on that, you'll just see so many fun things. They'll get so much stronger in their upper body. And of course, this could be tied together for your client, and we just aren't seeing that connection yet. Again, the whole body is so intricately connected. It's really hard to separate one thing and say it's not connected from another. All right. On that note, I want you guys to go out there this week and use this information and learn from your clients that are in front of you and just continue to encourage them, because everybody deserves to enjoy movement. Have a great night.
Thanks for listening to this P3 podcast. If you liked it, please go to iTunes and rate it. You can also subscribe to our program on iTunes so that you don't miss a single episode. I want to leave you with a final message to keep in mind this week. Everyone deserves to enjoy movement, and you're the one that can help them do it.